Welcome to the Teaching Exceptional Children's Podcast. The mission of this podcast is to help close the research to practice gap for practitioners in special education by creating a platform to facilitate conversations with key scholars in the field regarding the latest publications in the journal, as well as using the journal for professional development. You're probably wondering who I am. My name is Christina Eagle, and I'm a PhD student at George Mason University. Part of my role at Mason is to be an editorial assistant for the journal under the guidance of our wonderful team of editors. I am honored to be the host of Teaching Exceptional Children's Podcast, and I can't wait for you to be a part of this journey with us. Thanks for listening, and let's get started. Well, welcome to the Teaching Exceptional Children podcast. Today we are talking about the article Thriving, New Special Education Teaching and the First 6 Weeks of School. We are so excited to have Dr. Peters and Dr. Conrad with us from The Ohio State University. Welcome. Both of you have extensive experience with special education, instructional practices, and reaching all students with a classroom with effective teaching. I have the article right here. I'm looking at the new piece coming out. And I wanted to start with you talking us through your thinking process that led you to create the Thrive Guide.
Well, great. I'll start because I coordinate our student teaching program. And so we all during the program prepare our students to understand about special education, to learn about high leverage practices. We give them guided practice and support through and into their student teaching year. And then they realize, oh my gosh, first people are asking me for resumes and, you know, and I'm doing job searches while I'm student teaching. And they panic because they realize they don't know if they're prepared enough for that first day. And so what, you know, my experience has been is if we can give them tools to mitigate that stress and to let them know that there are some things that they can do to make that first day manageable and to think about it from various perspectives, then I feel like it brings down the temperature, you know, and they're not those deer in the headlights anymore. And they get the idea that, yes, they can do this and do this well, that in fact, we have prepared them. And it's just a matter of taking step by step, you know, when they get there.
Awesome.
Mary is probably the most exceptional student teaching coordinator I've ever come across. And not only is she preparing teachers to do a good job when they get into the field, she also has taken a lot of extra effort in building relationships with our students and helping them know that, you know, that we're here for them. And I don't know if I'm sure she remembers this, but one of the things that when I first became aware of her work on this Thrive Guide, it wasn't called that yet. And it wasn't, you know, the official Thrive Guide that you see in the publication, but it was pretty close to that. She, along with these amazing gifts that she gives to our teachers, our student teachers, when they graduate, she actually wrapped these up as gifts for our student teachers. And obviously she'd been working through all of these steps with them to know, so they know what they are, but having it in that checklist form, was a parting gift that yeah. Mary developed.
What a gift. What yeah. a gift. Yeah. Yeah.
But we said, you know what? We need to give this gift to more people.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. How generous of you to share that with the world. I love that. Yeah. I am currently working within a school system in Virginia, and my school just recently asked me to mentor a brand new special education teacher. And just so many things hit me when working with my new colleague, first, there's just so much. So many trainings, requirements that are for every year, right? But also, it is also really hard because I've been doing this for a while of almost 20 years. And to remember those first days, those first weeks, that first month. And so I think it's really helpful to break, if you could break down the Thrive Guide for me and how it's organized, and how it could help both a mentor teacher like myself and also some brand new teachers.
Well, there are a few ways that it's organized. Probably the one of the most helpful things I think is that it's organized chronologically, right? Just like you said, kind of implied in your question is the how overwhelming it all is, and how do you know what to do? How do you know where to get started? How do you know what to prioritize? So I think the breaking it down into the chronological chunks, right? What to do before that first day? What to do early on? What to do up to that first 6 week mark, I think is the kind of unique thing about it, right? But in addition to that, it's also organized by content and skill area, right? And then it's also organized by the high leverage practices. So it's sort of three-dimensional in that sense, sort of however you want to approach it, right? Time-wise, skill-wise, content-wise, it kind of covers all of those entry points into that transition into that first year.
Yeah, very
Well,
so
right.
helpful.
And as well, so there are different categories of things, right? So students don't know, like, honestly, it's like deer in the headlights, as you said earlier. And that is like, what's the first thing I do when I get, after I get hired? Do you know? And what am I supposed to do this summer? Like, I don't even know. I've not met a mentor teacher yet. What are the things that I can be preparing myself for in this new job that I have? So there are all these little mini tasks, everything from do you have access to, the internet system that you're supposed to be using and emails and, and access to whatever platform the school district is using to communicate, with parents and with students. So that's right, a very basic kind of thing, right? And then it's like, okay, so then what are the things that you can do in terms of building up your instructional repertoire? What needs to happen? What do kids need to know and be able to do that first week? How do you get not only through that first week, but learn a lot about your students in that first week? Learn a lot about your environment and they learn about you. That's really important. And then the other big thing is like, and as we all know, it's the building of relationships that have to happen early. And if you don't establish them early, it's very tough to recover, right? So the idea is know who the people in your neighborhood are in in your school community. Get to know your parents, get to know your students. All those things are really the most important thing to be doing in the very beginning. So we don't want to forget also that they need to take care of themselves. One of the things that we know about our students is they get overwhelmed. It is a lot. Transition in any environment, I don't know about you, any new job, any new anything is very stressful. So the idea of taking care of themselves was also a real part of this Thrive Guide. That we can write you a, create a checklist for you, but unless some of those things on that checklist involve your own self-help, self-care, that we're missing a really important component of your personal and professional development and well-being.
Yeah, and especially thinking about I've done some work with thinking about keeping teachers teaching, right? So j that self-care is like so critical to that as well. I love that part. And I think for our listeners, just making sure that you really get into this issue, right? And really looking at listening to the vignettes and also to what the article says, but also, those figures are so helpful for our readers and teachers to be using. Awesome. One of the things that I love about this guide is that you have connected them to high leverage practices. Can you explain why high leverage practices are important and how the Thrive Guide promotes them?
Want to take that one,
Sure.
Mary?
Yeah, I can take it, or you.
Go ahead. You go ahead. I'll jump in.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we have made a priority in our teacher education program is to be very clear with our students about the importance of knowing and practicing high leverage practices. And that happens in Maura's classroom, that happens in my classroom, in all our methods programs. But it's one thing to learn about and practice when it's guided, that then also remember to implement them and to get better at implementing them when you're actually teaching. So we wanted to make that bridge from the knowing and learning about to the doing independently, doing it well with high fidelity once you get into the field. Now, there are 22 practices. We can't imagine that all of our students know how to do them all well with fidelity. It's practice and experience. But they need to start keeping their eye on what those things are. And that as they're working through this checklist that we have for them, they will see that they're actually proceeding through these high leverage practices. So, as high leverage practice three, when we're collaborating with families, for example, that starts very early, in our checklist. As they're developing their routines and procedures in the classroom, they're working on, their high leverage practices around creating safe and conducive learning environments. So we want to make that connection between learning, doing, practicing, and implementing, systematically.
Yeah,
I love
and
that.
in our minds, in our approach to this, you can't really separate your practice from these high leverage practices, right? So you're transitioning into a new job. We could make it all about, get your badge and make sure that you send a letter home to parents and just make it a very surface level checklist. And all of that's important too and is on the checklist. But we also know that back to your point about, teacher retention and teacher burnout, if teachers aren't practicing with effective instruction and effective classroom management strategies, they're going to burn out more quickly because they're not going to get the wins in the classroom that maintain their commitment to the field. So transitioning into a new job without these high leverage practices, doesn't make sense to us from our perspective. So you kind of have to, like, it's all part of the same package.
And one of the things that I think is like when I saw that, I'm in a reevaluation year where I'm being evaluated. And when I sat down again, I've been doing this for a while, and I thought, what do I do? And it's re I think it's also hard, the quickness, the fast paced of teaching. It's really hard to slow yourself down to think about what you are working on and what you are doing. So I thought that one implication of this is that it's a tool to help teachers identify what they have done well and also some areas of growth, because we're all learning and we never have the same students again and again and again. But how do you think the Thrive Guide promotes teacher performance and also that reflection piece?
One of the things that I think about is what I say to my students. And I tell them that all students, including themselves, need to know this. Where am I now? Where am I going? And how do I close the gap in between? Right? So I feel like what we need to do is give them a roadmap that tells them, ask them to self-assess, where are you now? What's working for you early on? Before it becomes an issue, and how can you leverage the skills of the people in your environment, including your mentor, to close the gaps? Because you can't do it all yourself. And so I feel like mentors could use this tool. One, what you were saying earlier, like, what do I really do here? Well, it's hard to be as a mentor to take the time to organize all the things that a new teacher might need to know, or you assume that they do know, and they don't yet. So this helps everybody be on the same page, and then they can use the tool sort of as a self-assessment, right? Where am I now after the first week, or second week, or the fourth week? And what do I need to continue to work on? You know, what went well? What didn't go well? What am I struggling with here? So I feel like it gives a form for the conversation to be had between the mentor and the classroom, the new classroom teacher. The other thing I think about too is that teachers don't always know when to ask for help. You know? And so if they come across an obstacle by using this guide, then they know exactly what to ask for. This is, I see this on this checklist, and this has really been a struggle for me. I don't actually know how to enact this the way I think it should be enacted. And that's a great conversation to have with your mentor.
Yeah, and
And I
then
think,
oh, yeah. It, well, I'm sorry. The one of the things that I think that I connected with too is like, it's okay. It's okay not to know, right? It's about that pursuit. So I love that. I love that. I'm sorry,
yeah,
Debbie
and
Conrad. Go
I
ahead.
think a design as a checklist, it was very intentional in that regard, right? It is, these are literal steps that you take to sort of launch your year or launch your career. So that's definitely part of that. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about is accountability. There are a lot of people, I'm one of these people, who thrive, pardon the pun, on external accountability. And, you know, when you're in your pre-service program, there's a lot of external accountability. And as you transition into that first job, there's less, I mean, certainly more than maybe a veteran teacher. But eventually, a tool like this Thrive Guide could actually serve as the external accountability. I'm accountable to this checklist. And of course, the ultimate constituents, you know, the families and the school and the children are our ultimate external accountability. But when you are, you know, just trying to keep your head above water, like just making decisions about what to do first, second, third, that can take a lot of energy, and that will distract you from what your real job is there. So I think having sort of this accountable, like, document that I'm accountable for getting these things done frees up a lot of decision making energy, right? That you can then allocate to things that are much more meaningful.
And it's so easily to spin your wheels, right? Of
Yeah,
like thinking about
exactly.
what you should be doing.
Yep.
And I do love that. It's just very practical and can really help any teacher really get going and with purpose and intention. That's
Yeah,
great.
and I think it's not, like you said, it's not just new teachers, right? And it's not just their mentors, really anyone along. And Mary's told me, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about some of the
Sure.
veteran teachers who've come back to you when they've seen this.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. So I teach a class on classroom management to some inner city school teachers in the summer. And some of them are fairly novice, but some of them have 30 years experience. And so I wrap up the end of the semester talking about how their comprehensive classroom management plan is coming along. And I give them the Thrive Guide and say, look, you can adapt this. This was designed for new teachers, but what about you? Why don't you, edit it, create your own, but get, you see the idea, and that all of these kinds of strategies are things that we talked about during the course of the semester. I will tell you, I get really good feedback about this. So I have one teacher that said to me, I'm obsessed with this, you know.
I bet.
I'm going to be right because I wish I had this when I was a beginning teacher. And there are things on this list that I have struggled with to this day. Do you know that now I kind of have a sense of, to your earlier point, purpose, and I know what to do next. And this, you know, is going to really be useful as I enact my new classroom management plan for the school year.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think, yeah, I think it's also sometimes with teaching, there's some things where that are come and go, right? The things that you only do in the beginning of the year. And it's always hard when you get back to the beginning of another year of thinking of like, what, how do I do this again? So I thought it really helps with that. And then really not wanting to miss those high leverage practices, right? Of like
Right.
when you're doing these things, so many times I've seen teachers when we talk about like standards or things like that, they were like, oh, I've been doing that, but I didn't know that it was called this. And
Correct.
so really just knowing what you're doing, right? In the sense of I'm using these practices and there's a name for it as well.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I have found that we can talk to students all the time about using research-based practices, right? And evidence-based practices. But I believe that the high leverage practices has helped us quite a bit in our teacher training program because it's 22 concrete practices that have been research-based. I don't need you to look online or check ChatGPT or whatever it is. I have a set of practices for you that we are going to focus on because we know that they can produce good outcomes for students and families. So we are going to concentrate on those. And we're going to make this idea of being, research-based very accessible to you. Because if you are focused on these, you are being evidence-based, research-based. Now, recognize them again, enact them more deeply as you, develop your practice, and work on your own professional development in your new job.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really love about the high leverage practices is they provide sort of a built-in professional development trajectory, right? Doing any one of them is going to improve your practice, but there's so much room. They all connect to each other and build on one another. And so once you start, you can pick off a little low-hanging fruit early on and then just keep getting deeper and more polished and, work on generalization and work on some of the more advanced concepts that you can just keep working on for the rest of your career and always have, be able to reinvigorate and recommit to, improving outcomes for kids.
That's one of the things I love about teaching, right? Is that there's always something to work on, right? And improving your craft and the art form that is teaching. Awesome. What would you like new teachers and mentor teachers to know about the guide or about the article? That you want to stress during the podcast.
Well, one, I think that this article is very practical and accessible to both teachers and mentors. And as we just said earlier, not only new teachers, but teachers in general, as they try to refocus their summer brain and transition into their school brain. So I think that's one thing. Second thing is that the article itself has this clear checklist and additional resources. So this is printable and very usable, I think. And I think the third part is that this is just the beginning. This is the we describe the first 6 weeks because I do believe that a successful launch creates a lot of good momentum, right? And without a successful 6 weeks, you struggle through the rest of the school year. I think we know that. And so, our goal is for teachers to have some clarity and breathe a little bit around what they can expect, get their head, in the game, if you will, before the first day, and know that they can and will be successful. And for mentors, it'd be nice if we were, if they had this guide too, and that we created a common, vocabulary, and we're using the same tools so that we're all kind of helping each other. How can I, as a mentor, help you achieve this next few steps on this guide? So I think that's some of the most important things. And I think the other thing I'm gonna say is that I think we scare teachers a lot. We say, oh my gosh, it's going to be so hard that first year, but you'll get through, you'll survive, if you just keep with it, you'll strive to. And I would prefer to think about it in a more positive way, the idea of thriving, right? It is possible to thrive and do well with the right supports, right? And that, I think, is the overriding message from striving and, to thriving, that yes, even as a young teacher, you will thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Dr. Conrad, do you have anything you want to add?
I think that we've already sort of touched on this, but I think it's worth restating, is using the Thrive Guide as a communication tool. Sometimes I think, you're a new teacher, you're new to the building, you're new to the whole thing, and your mentor teacher's been there for, 2 decades or whatever, and just ha that gap in, that differential in experience can sometimes be intimidating. So when you have this structure, literally a piece of paper that you can share between you to come to a shared understanding of what's expected, and then just to be able to facilitate those conversations that sometimes might feel intimidating to a new teacher. So I think using it, whether you're the new teacher bringing the Thrive Guide to the mentor, or the mentor bringing it to the new teacher, or ideally they bring it to each other, but whatever that starting point is, I think it can serve as a way to, connect.
Yeah, I think I really connected with the idea of shared language, shared vocabulary of what to do, especially in education when we have so many different kinds of terms for
Right.
different or same
Yep.
things. And then also the idea of also looking and being reflective of the checklist as a mentor of saying like, look at how much you've done. Right, in a
Yeah.
very short amount of time. And these are these things, these other aspects of it. Let's talk about what is our thinking. They may take more time as you're developing and evolving as a teacher. I mean, I think as a teacher, in my experience, I think you evolve. It's not a, I was a effective teacher on day one. It was a slow progress forward, and so it's really nice to have like almost a pacing guide and a checklist and have that accountability.
I also think it allows for the conversation about how you're doing personally. Are you taking care of yourself? And sometimes that's a tough conversation. You don't know if you're getting into people's personal stuff, but the Thrive Guide could make it like, huh, so I see in the Thrive Guide, that we should be talking about how you're managing your stress. Are you thinking about that? How are you doing with that? Things like that could maybe help get into some conversations that maybe normally wouldn't happen.
Sure. I love that. I love that. In thinking about teaching profession and focusing on both being at different points in people's careers, one question that I hope to ask in this podcast and in future ones is tell me what brought you to education and what is keeping you going? What is your passion for education? And what do you love about our field?
I'll start. Mary and I are training teachers now, but we both had classroom experience with kids before we came into the university setting. And I can say honestly that what made me excited as a teacher in the classroom is the same thing that makes me excited now, which is that when I see my students' growth And we get to see them over multiple semesters. It's exciting, and now with this high leverage practice kind of framework, we can see them start to like learn a little bit about it and then practice it and then get more skilled at it. And then, they come back to us and talk to us after they've graduated. And that, is exactly the same thing that made me excited as a classroom teacher, right? Like right before our eyes, we are watching people's lives improve or people's practice improve or people's skills improve. So that's probably number one for me. But the other thing, and I think having the two of us on here together maybe highlights this, but is the relationships that you build with your colleagues. And I mean, Mary and I are always cooking up, new ideas for how do we scaffold these HLPs better, and how do we, do this in this setting, and where what are they doing in the field? And it's just a lot of fun. And so I would say to new teachers, like find your people, find people who are excited about it and who want to, I don't know, nerd out on these things. They may not readily appear, they may not be your mentor, they may not be in the same grade level you're teaching, but there are some people in your building and in your district who are excited about this stuff. And finding that and building those friendships and relationships in your professional community, I think makes it so that when it does get tough, and it gets tough, it always does,
Sure.
every profession has some tough moments, that you have, your people there to kind of process through that together. So that's what I would say gets me most excited about this.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Well, of course, I have to echo that because it is all about student growth. It's so reinforcing, even when I was teaching and as an administrator, and now here at Ohio State University, to see students grow. We see them in the very beginning of their program where they're just learning about the field itself. They're learning about the vocabulary. They're learning about these practices. And it's very interesting to see the products and the way they talk about students and their knowledge when they're ready to be done. Oftentimes, I have them write a letter during student teaching to parents. And the funny thing about that is that by the time they're in student teaching, I have to ask them to reduce the jargon they use because they're starting to talk like us. But that's an indication of their growth. They're very specific in the words that they use, and of course, parents it wouldn't relate to some of that. But nonetheless, this is the point. The point is they've learned so much, and they can communicate that learning. And all that's just one example. I think of how we see them grow, and become more independent, and hopefully highly effective teachers. And so the parallel, of course, is working with kids. You want to do the same thing, even as a parent, it's the same thing, right? You want your children to be able to learn and grow and ultimately be independent, and to see that growth and to watch that, and oftentimes even to measure that, is highly, highly reinforcing, I hope that we can make an impact on them that, that lasts well beyond their years at the Ohio State University, and
Yeah.
that they pay it forward, that they think about how they can mentor others and they can take the things that they learned and help others.
Yeah. I love that. I think my hope is that I finding your people right within the building and who are aligned with you, heart aligned with like the passion that you have for the field, people who challenge your thinking about the field, people who help you be a better teacher are always the people that you need to surround yourself with. I know that they have made my career. I hope that for our listeners that you gather your people, you read this article, and you really engage with the checklist and the article as a whole to really reflect about your practice and how you can make it better. Dr. Peters, Dr. Conrad, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast. I have thoroughly enjoyed listening to you and learning from you. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank
Oh,
you
it was
for
our
having me.
pleasure.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun talking to you, and we wish the best to all those new teachers out there.
Yeah, you're gonna make it. You're gonna thrive.
That's right.
Exactly right.
A
Plan
bright
on
future.
thriving.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank
Take
you.
care.
Thank you for listening to the Teaching Exceptional Children's podcast. Make sure to check us out and follow our social media accounts listed in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to rate us and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Be on the lookout for our next episode to drop, and until then, happy teaching!